Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and joining me on this latest installment of the greatest TV drama episodes of all time, hey, she's not just the CJ to my Toby, but she's someone who probably knows the show we'll be discussing this week like the back of Josh Lyman's bloody hand. Or maybe I should say she knows it from Ada Ziegler. I don't know. Hey, it's Colleen. Hey, Colleen.
Hey. How long did it take you to think of those puns? They were very punny.
I thought of Ada Ziegler right away, and I just felt I needed to to add a little bit more to it. And then when I was watching a series of episodes with the one when Josh Lyman is talking to the psychiatrist, I went, oh, back of hand, back of Josh Lyman's bloody hand. That'll be
Ada Ziegler is pretty solid.
Yeah, I was very proud of that. It kind of spoils something I'm going to talk about a little bit later when we get into favorite characters, but who cares?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway, hello again, everybody.
Here she is, and for all you guys, for all you guys who listened to our previous installment, which was on Game of Thrones: Reigns of Castamere, you'll probably recall I said a little bit about a Colleen, and then Pat practically gushed about her. So
Pat's my buddy on Twitter.
Oh my, he's the king of Twitter.
He knows everybody.
He's insane. It's like. Pat, please tweet our podcast. We want some of those Pat tweet follower listeners. And we've gotten like, I don't know, two. Anyway.
I know. I am but a mere friend. I'm but a mere like Twitter friend. Like, no. You know what I mean? Like I'm not not a mere one. Like he's merely my Twitter friend, but you know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
I am one of many of his. That's awesome.
Gotcha. So anyway, as many of our listeners must be, I am looking forward to this podcast because we are going to get to talk about what's number 8 on the greatest TV drama episodes of all time countdown. It is, of course, the second season finale of The West Wing, the episode, Two Cathedrals. But let me get my obsessive need to give a little disclaimer first. And as I've said a dozen times before, this countdown is not based on my own personal preferences and biases, at least until we get to the next one. In fact, I don't even know if this would be my favorite episode of the series, to be honest with you. It's actually based on me combing through any number of articles, columns, and websites that have made such lists over the years and ranked episodes and so on. I whittled it down to a series so that a series could only be represented by once in the countdown, tossed out anything we had already covered on our podcasts, and voila, the top 20 was conceived, born, and we've been watching it grow to maturity since mid-October. So now with that out of the way, let's get to The West Wing. I'll give a little bit of history, which is, you know, appropriate for a show like this. The West Wing ran on NBC from the fall of 1999 to the end of its final season in 2006. It totaled up, depends how you look at it, it totaled up either 155 or 156 episodes. I'm going to say it's 155 because some, like IMDb or other places, some people include a West Wing special as an episode. I've watched it. That's not an episode. It's 155. As I'm sure everyone listening knows, it was created by Aaron Sorkin. Aaron Sorkin, it's one of those names, it's one of the very few writer creators that most anybody with a passing knowledge of TV has heard of, as well as the mediums of motion pictures and stage plays. You know, his work on the stage includes, and probably is best known for, A Few Good Men, which he also later adapted into the film that was directed by Rob Reiner. So, you know, he's the dude behind You Can't Handle the Truth, which that already puts him in a special place in my heart, you know. And of course, in more recent years, he actually adapted the world-famous book and film To Kill a Mockingbird, which had a successful run on Broadway, at least until COVID-19 happened, which pretty much ended Broadway, period, for the last year or so. Just to finish up his little bio here, his film career beyond A Few Good Men, pretty illustrious as well, because he wrote the screenplays for films such as The American President, Moneyball, and he actually got an Academy Award for his work on The Social Network. Now, TV-wise, other than the West Wing, of course. He's the man behind the much appreciated, if not much watched, Sports Night, the even less seen Studio 66 on the Sunset Strip.
I liked Studio 66. Isn't it Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip?
You are right, and you know why I got that wrong? I never watched it.
I liked it.
That's the one, it's like the West Coast version of Saturday Night Live kind of a thing, but behind the scenes.
Yeah, with Matthew Perry.
Right, Matthew Perry, I should have known. And, of course, he's also what was behind HBO's The Newsroom. Personal note, that might be the one Sorkin project I personally am not a big fan of. But we don't need to go there tonight because that will be a digression that I'll spend 20 minutes ranting about what's wrong with The Newsroom. We don't need to go there just yet. But, you know, it's not that good. And I love Jeff Daniels, but still. Anyway, thankfully, unlike our last TV drama on the list, Game of Thrones, and as, you know, I told you, Pat was over the moon about you. He kept talking about your podcasting pearls of wisdom. He never said that, but I'm saying it. Unlike Game of Thrones, which is a bit of a bitch to nutshell that series into just a sentence or two, The West Wing, it's pretty easy. It's, you know, it's about the key members of President, you know, Josiah Bartlett's administration. And of course, where is the Oval Office and the various offices of any administration? It's in the West Wing of the White House. Okay, got that little history out of the way. Now we can actually talk about the series.
It's about the president and his staff.
And it's interesting because if I'm not mistaken, when they originally conceived the show, the president was not going to be that major a character on the series.
Right.
And then I think it must have been after they cast Martin Sheen. And of course, it's not like no one knew who Martin Sheen was at the time. He already had, you know, a good 25 years, you know, legacy of acting. But once they realized what they had, like, oh, we need to rejigger this a little bit. He is really going to be the main character on this because everything's kind of revolving around him in one form or another, I think.
Yeah.
Now, did you
being the president and all?
Right, exactly. Did you watch it when it was originally on, or did you catch it later on?
I did not. So I've actually never seen the last after Rob Lowe's character leaves. I have not seen since like the back end of the series. I somewhat know what happens, but the first time I watched it was my maternity leave in 2018. So it'd be February 2018. And we watched the first, what is that, 4 or 5 seasons, and somehow fell off. And it's funny because I had been saying to my husband, I was like, I want to do a rewatch so we can finish it, but I want to start from the beginning because I don't remember a whole lot. I want to do a rewatch. And, you know, he was kind of like, yeah. And then one day he was like 4 episodes into season 1 and I was like, what the hell? And he was like, oh, did you want to rewatch it? And I was like, fuck you. So it was like, what? And I was like, I hate you right now. So I haven't rewatched. We're in the middle of season 3 and I haven't watched every single one with him, but you know, I've been participating in the rewatch when I am around.
Oh, okay.
So except for right now, I'm pretty sure he probably has one on right now.
Excellent. Oh, hey, we all got West Wing on the brain tonight then. Great. I also didn't watch The West Wing when it originally aired. For me personally, I just thought, I heard about it, I saw the ads, I just figured it wasn't my cup of tea, you know? And again, you know, as you obviously might know, I'm a bit of a TV guy, you know, and I kind of buy into how TV underwent like this huge renaissance right when the 20th century was coming to a close, even though I'm the guy who says, well, it started back in 97 with Oz, but you know, but most people, they go to 99 and they point to The Sopranos as like the series that really jump started the TV revolution, you know, because that became all of a sudden cable providers started pumping out like really well executed, very mature series. And, you know, I use the phrase jumpstart of the TV revolution, and I don't want to sound like I'm just cribbing from Alan Sepinwall's book, you know, The Revolution Will Be Televised. There probably isn't a better way to put it. When I look at a show like The West Wing, and when I finally did get around to watching it, and I didn't watch it until 2000, wow, I don't know. I'm going to say 2010, 2011, sometime around then. It was back when we still got discs from Netflix, because that was how I
watched it. Oh, yeah. Because that's how we watched BSG.
Yep, exactly, exactly.
Before we finally sucked it up and bought the whole series once it, or did we buy the whole series? I forget exactly what we did. No, we didn't buy the whole series until later because it was airing the last season when we started watching it. I think that was what
right,
it was.
Right, right, right.
But yes, and you had to like make sure you returned one disc as soon as you were done with it and then started your second one. So that way you didn't have like a lapse in when you could watch things.
Exactly. You learned how to stagger your watching and popping it back in the mail. So, you know, if you're getting like three discs at once, like pop that one in the mail right away, because that way by the time you finish the other two, the next one will come. It was awesome.
Right. And then you kept checking like your Netflix homepage to be like, did they get it back yet? Is the next one on the way? Oh, what's next on my queue? Let me adjust my queue.
And what would drive you insane, especially if you're watching like a multiple season series. It's not like, you know, you're waiting for the next hot movie or something. You know, you're waiting for like the third disc from season 5 of The West Wing or something. And someone else suddenly has it. What? How is that happening?
I think that actually really helped. Breaking Bad, right? Because all of a sudden everybody was like catching up on it on Netflix, and then A&E ran like the marathons for people to catch up on it. But like, I think I want to say that one of the first shows that caught on because of the streaming services or, you know, disc sharing services was Breaking Bad.
I would agree. That's the way I did it, because one of my guilty admissions, being, you know, Mr. Breaking Bad over here, is that I didn't watch it until in between seasons 2 and 3. And yeah, I got the discs to do that. I was reading the New York Times one weekend, a few times I've ever done that actually, and there was an article about Bob Odenkirk, and I'm a big fan of Bob Odenkirk, and I didn't know he was on Breaking Bad, and I'm like, oh, I gotta check this show out, and I heard, oh, season 3 is coming back in like a couple of weeks. Oh, so I, fortunately, you know, season 1 was fairly short, so I was able to get it all watched before season 3 started. I'm like, oh my god, I love this show so much. But what I was saying, and why I brought up things like The Sopranos, whatever, I think The West Wing, the way I kind of look at it, it's in a weird way, it's kind of like a bridge. It's kind of a bridge between what was and then what TV was and what TV was about to become. Because, you know, on one hand, I think of it as a very old school series. You know, it's a weekly network show that, even though they would have, you know, obviously they had season long arcs and all that kind of stuff,
but things were contained to one episode.
Exactly.
And, you know, it was all neatly wrapped up for the most part.
Right. You regardless of there being any sort of season long arc, with very few exceptions, and there are a few, you could, what you just said, every episode had its own like little singular standalone identity. You could turn on any episode randomly, and as long as you caught the previously on the West Wing, so that, you know, part or whatever, however they set up for the West Wing, you were pretty much were up to date. You could pretty much get into it and watch it and enjoy it. But on the other hand, so that's the old school part, but the revolutionary part with the West Wing, especially during the first 4 seasons, which are the Sorkin years.
Yeah.
It more so than most any other TV series, at least before that, it's almost entirely a dialogue driven show and really smart dialogue. It's one of the few shows I think you watch where everyone, just about everyone you meet, is of some level of keen intellect. Even when they present someone who's supposed to be kind of dumb, they're still pretty smart. You know, I always thought that was like, wow, there's so many smart people in the White House. You know, obviously this is, you know, a fantasy, but, you know, it's pretty cool. So basically you've got a show, it's smart people having smart dialogue with each other with a lot of walking around. They have those conversations. There's probably more walking around in this show than any other show I can think of. And I think people joke about that with The West Wing, and I would always point out to them, well, just, you know, that's kind of a writer and a director's trick. It just gives you the sense of forward motion in whatever it is you're watching. You know,
right.
Because it's making you think it's advancing at a brisk walking pace, even if they're just going from one office to the other.
Right. See Smith, Kevin movies.
Excellent. Oh, man. What's really interesting about the West Wing, I mean, obviously, I know a lot of people, I think we both know there's been a lot of people who've gravitated to watching the show over the last, let's say, 4 years.
Yeah, maybe five, give or take.
Yeah, 4.5 to 5 years. I can't imagine why.
Yeah.
You know, it's a mystery. But going back to when it was originally on, it's kind of fascinating that a show where, let's face it, the subject matter is basically politics still attracted a really strong viewership. And if you think about it, that's really not the kind of thing most people want to sit back and watch every, whatever it was, Wednesday night or whatever it aired. You know, you usually want something a bit more escapist or something, or a cop show or a medical show, that kind of thing. A show based around politics, you can't think of too many, especially in the dramatic world, of shows that really lasted very long that anyone really wanted to watch. And so The West Wing is kind of, I think, almost stands alone in that regard. And what's interesting is because it's a Democratic administration, but you know, they did a really idealized version of the executive branch. And even though, you know, even if the administration was Democratic, if you watch those most episodes, I never felt they really demonized the right. I mean, they demonize,
you know, like the majority leader, or like, you know, they definitely sort of not demonize, but like point out like the politics of it all. But like, even then, like when they're going to have the hearing and they're going to expose Leo for his relapse, it's the Republican lawyer and like that side that decides to shut the other one down, to be like, you know what, we're going to do this after the recess, like, you know, after the Christmas recess or whatever. So like, it definitely doesn't demonize it. And I feel like it does somewhat portray a false sense of unity in government, which, you know, clearly isn't there, especially not anymore. Yeah. And, you know, it's so, and I know that there are definitely people that argue against the West Wing because their whole thing is, if you take out some of the problematic stuff in it, which rewatching it in a 2021 lens, there are some things where I'm like, I don't know if this is dialogue that would be, you know, said that way nowadays or whatever. But when you take out like some of the misogynistic stuff and the fact that, like, you know, it does tend to be a bit of a sausage fest, plus CJ and sometimes Ainsley and sometimes Donna. but I feel like nowadays people watch it more. Okay, so I'm sorry. The argument against it, that it romanticized it so much that it got people thinking that, like, they didn't, especially on the left, that you don't have to play dirty. You can always do the right thing and you'll, you know, people will appreciate it and see you for the better. Whereas that is clearly 100% not true. But the argument against it is, well, that brought us to where we are, where, you know, people didn't realize just how dangerous, you know, a party that doesn't want to work and constantly demonizes another party in real life is not like a TV show. And I think, though, more than that argument, people watch it now to, like, escape from the absolute shit show that is our government. Like, this is how it should be.
Right, right.
It could be, yeah. But it will never be.
Like you said, it's definitely idealized. It's interesting, you know, you asked someone 20 years ago, because now, as you were just saying, like, partisan politics has just morphed into an us versus them, and the them almost always must be evil way of looking at practically everything. But someone watching, you know, The West Wing in, you know, 1999, 2000, 2001, Republican or Democrat, one would say, oh, I could get behind this administration. You know, it's all about, look, they have a conscience and they talk things out and they compromise. And it's like, yeah, imagine they did that in actual government, which we've seen more and more no longer is the case. You know, you have to talk to older folk who reminisce about, oh, you know, Reagan and Tip O'Neill used to get along like gangbusters, and they would, you know, they would break bread and they would compromise on stuff. And it's like, yeah, you're making.
Yeah, if you can overlook a healthy dose of racism and gay killing and all that other stuff, why not get along? They also overlook the child molester. Oh, man. I went there. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
I apologize.
I don't care. You know.
QAnon, really. I mean, the call is coming from inside the house, but.
QAnon. Well, yeah.
I'm sorry. What are you saying? Because I had another joke, but now I forgot where we started. Go ahead.
That's okay. I'm going to try. I think the train just leapt into the fucking bus station. Now I gotta find our way back here.
You're welcome. Unity, Reagan, Tip O'Neill.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Drinking.
Whatever. Alzheimer's.
Alzheimer's, AIDS. Anyway, I know.
Hey, he was the original, right? The original. The original
ignorer of a pandemic. Yes.
Yeah. Right. And not even ignorer of a pandemic. I was going to make a joke about Trump's mental health, but I won't. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, anyway. So
it wasn't quite there.
Okay. Well, the series, unlike apparently real life, always maintained that regardless of, you know, political favor or party, the big thing was they always strove to do the right thing. And there was always this heavy load of conscience and empathy behind most any decision, even if one could argue that they didn't always make the best decision. And I know we've never actually, I don't think you and I, up until this evening, we've never discussed the series before, you know, unlike all those tons of TV conversations we've had before. I didn't get to listen to a podcast that you actually did a few months ago. Didn't you do one where you discussed the West Wing special that was done for HBO?
We did do that for the Jane Jack. So we did it for the patrons of Jane Jack Network, and then we released it on the main feed.
Yeah.
Like a delayed release, and we talked about it. Yeah, that was fun.
It was delightful. But since I hadn't gotten a chance to hear that, and since we've never talked about the West Wing, now I don't actually know who your favorite character is, but I'm pretty sure I know first guess who it is. I think I know you well enough to know who it is.
Okay.
My first guess would have been Sam Seaborn.
Leo. Leo is the best. I love Leo.
Leo, interesting.
Love Leo. Every time, like, there's something, I'm like, Leo is the best.
Leo is a fantastic choice. I mean, there's so much great about the Leo McGarry character. I mean, talk about being a conscience of the series, but also being, you know, a straight shooter. And I could have sworn I had... Oh, here we go. I knew I had something in my notes about Leo. What did I write here? Oh, yeah, outside of maybe Sam and the president himself, he's the first one that I think of as being, like, a truly good person, but he's also the person dealing with his own demons. But I love his interactions and his relationship to other characters, because...
Sam?
Well, the stuff with Sam is really sweet, but no, we're talking about Leo.
Oh, sorry.
No.
I was thinking about how, I do like Sam, but like, I guess if we were gonna like list it like characters I'd have sex with, it would only be Sam.
Well, yeah, that's looking at that cast, that might be my choice, quite frankly. Have you seen Stalker Channing lately?
Anyway. Oh, she's great, though, and she would be wild.
She's great, but, you know, if you...
As would CJ Craig.
Oh, by the way, watch during the course of one season and realize she had plastic surgery at some point during that time. It's like, oh, what happened to her face, like, during the season? Anyway.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. You haven't gotten to it yet, because you're...
I do love me some Stalker Channing, though.
Oh, yeah, she's great on it, but you know. But back to Leo, the thing I was going to say about him, because he's got like almost a brotherly love between him and Bartlett, and yet he's got this interesting, almost like a father-son like relationship with Josh. That whole thing that they have between each other, where they have that the story about a friend who falls down a hole, I smiled when I heard it again, because it's such a beautiful and great little story analogy. I don't know what the heck you call it, but it's such a nice little bit of inspirational talk that doesn't feel too cloying or nauseating. It's just really nicely done.
Yeah.
Hopefully you know which thing I'm talking about.
Well, I'm trying to be supportive.
Oh man, if you don't remember it, you got to go back and watch it. It's amazing.
All right.
Now, people who know, if anyone knows me reasonably well, I'm not saying that you do, because I don't think you do. It's easy to guess who my favorite character is. I'll give you one shot before I say who it is.
Jesus.
Dead silence.
Oh, it's got to be Josh Lyman.
No.
No?
Not a bad guess.
Oh, it's Toby.
Toby, of course it's.
Because you're Toby.
Of course it's Toby. Look, he's a guy who can be like morose, angry. He was accused of his life of just being plain sad. But he's also pretty much one of the smartest, if not the smartest guy in the room. He's not shy about sharing his opinion. He puts people in their place quite often, and he screws up just enough so that we know he's human. Plus, the dude has a beard. He's Jewish. He's a Yankees fan. Come on. Who else am I going to relate to more than Toby Ziegler?
That's very true. You are Toby.
I love Toby. So when I was getting ready for the series, for the podcast, I should say, about the series, how I did it was I did kind of like a mini rewatch. I mean, if you can call 20 episodes mini, I don't know. And the way I was able to do it, and I've actually done this a few times in this for shows in this countdown. When a series has like a massive number of episodes, you know, like the X-Files did, obviously, or House or whatever, you know, I'm not going to rewatch an entire season or two. I made that exception for The Good Wife because the fifth season is amazing. But generally, I'm not going to do that. That's the one time I will use a stupid site like IMDb. I'll use their ranking and I'll just go, okay, all the episodes that have like a 9 or higher, I'll put all those down. And if I choose to watch any other ones, you know, I'll add them. And I think I came up with like 16 or 17 that had a ranking of 9 or higher. And then I added a few because I wanted to see where a storyline went. So I watched like 2 or 3 more episodes after it. It's like, oh, I forgot John Goodman was on this show. I'm gonna watch a few of these.
I have to finish The Good Wife. I stopped after, you know, one of the characters left because I was really upset and I was like, I can't do this. And then I started The Good Fight during my maternity leave in 2018 and I was caught up to that, but I need to finish it.
So wait, you didn't finish The Good Wife, but you switched over to The Good Fight? That's interesting.
I did.
You got it.
Well, Dennis told me that I had to watch it.
Oh yeah, Dennis, right, got it. Well, that's
okay. I was like, so, you know, I was looking for something to do on maternity leave and I was like, all right, I'll give this a shot. It was like early on. I mean, like less than 2 weeks old, Alex, early on. Like it was one of those times I remember watching on the couch before I could was fully functional again.
That's amazing.
Because I think it was only like 1.5 seasons at the time.
Right. It's funny because I was the one who got a number of people into watching The Good Wife. My friend got me into watching it. And then I became, okay, everyone needs to watch this show. You know, they go, oh, it's a CBS show. No, shut up. Watch this show.
Good Wife is fantastic. I don't know if it ends fantastic, but I was going to say the season where a certain character left wasn't like the greatest as it was. And then I was kind of like, meh.
If we're talking about the same thing, that's a great season. That's one of the best TV seasons. Period. If we're talking about what I think we're talking about,
the big exit.
Yes, the shocker. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the fifth season's an amazing season. That oh my god, one of the episodes we picked for this countdown was from that season. And I had to tell people it's not going to be that.
That's
episode.
Where he's running for governor or something. Mr. Big.
Yes, he is. Right. Actually, that was the season before with the voting. I think he's already governor when the fifth season starts.
Okay.
Because he was going to put Diane on the Supreme Court.
The state Supreme Court. That's right.
And then when everything went awry, he took that away from her. We all know what happened that season. Great season. Anyway, why are we talking about The Good Wife? It's a long podcast. So, yeah.
Something to do with the law.
Yeah, pretty much. And there's a lot of politics in it. And, you know, I'm saying that because obviously there's a bunch of other episodes we can reference. I didn't realize that you hadn't completed. I thought you would. I just assumed you had completed the entire series. I apologize.
No, I have not.
Okay, so do you know who shows up in the final season of The West Wing? You probably know. You just didn't watch the episodes.
I do know.
Okay, good.
I know. I believe I probably just read the summaries on Wikipedia.
Well, here's the interesting thing. When you look at the rankings, I'm sure are pretty spot on for this show, at least. You'll notice that, like, nothing in season 6 gets a 9 or higher, which kind of tells you. And pretty much everyone knows that, not everyone, but many people will say once Sorkin left, obviously the show kind of took a little bit of a total nosedive, but a little bit. One might even say what Sorkin did towards the end of the fourth season was kind of indicative of, oh, well, screw you guys. I'm gonna mess everything up here. You know?
Yes.
So I think the bulk of the episodes I was watching were in those first four seasons, although I did watch a couple in the final season, including the final episode. And because, you know, that final, you know, you got Jimmy Smits and Alan Alda, I gotta watch at least one of them, you know.
Right.
But it's funny. The thing I wanted to say, so I ended up watching 20 episodes, and 17 of them were considered, you know, the quote unquote the best episodes, whatever. And even after watching 20 of them, there is this clip that I've seen more than any other clip of The West Wing ever. I mean, every year, at least once or twice, someone will post it on Facebook to make some sort of point or something. And I was surprised that it didn't turn out to be in one of the episodes I watched. And I bet you, if I start to mention what it is, I think you know the clip I'm talking about.
Okay.
It's, I guess, you know, it's a scene, it's from early in season 2. The episode was The Midterms. It's the one when President Bartlet, he basically walks into a room and he ends up taking down that conservative talk show host.
Oh, yes. That episode and that scene is, Jay said, was the reason that he started his rewatch, because he was trying to find it because he felt like he needed to watch some conservative. I swear to God. But he thought it was somewhere in season 1. So it wasn't until, yes, the Laura Ingraham wannabe.
I think it's a few episodes into season 2. It's The Midterms. And just to show you why you shouldn't base everything on the rankings or whatever, IMDb, as far as, you know, of 150 whatever episodes, they have that episode ranked as like number 52.
Right.
You know, then again, Hartsfield Landing, the one they did for the reunion thing, they got that one ranked at like 47. So that's why
I don't love Hartsfield Landing. Like,
but, you know, but I understand why they, but I think it was a good one to adapt for a stage play setting. I think it worked for that better than maybe some of the more higher regarded episodes. Just the way, cause it's the way it's staged and the way the dialogue is done and with the chest and everything else, I think works well for a stage play. I'm not saying it's one of my favorite episodes.
Oh, yeah. Definitely works well for a stage play.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, like the one we're going to be talking about tonight, I guess it could. No, I take that back. I could see the Tooth Cathedrals being done if they'd done that first stage. But that's really more of that would have been more centered on Bartlet rather than giving everybody kind of an equal time in that episode. Let me see if there's anything else. Oh, you know, we already mentioned Sam Seaborn. I love all the Sam and Josh scenes. Mm-hmm. Because I like I said, one of the things I like about them is when you see the Sam and Josh scenes, I like to imagine that they're like the younger versions of like Leo and Josiah. You know, it kind of has that feel to it to me.
Yeah.
Even though I guess when you haven't finished the series, I don't want to spoil something, so stop it. Okay, stop myself. And of course, Allison Janney, you know, CJ, you know, who doesn't like her? You know, as long as she's not on some lost island or something, she's great. So.
Yeah, right.
Couldn't resist. You know.
Remember that time there was this lost episode and we were like, why is Allison Janney here and not making it better? Yeah, I remember.
I used to say she makes everything better. Like, no. Actually, I don't actually have a big problem. Well, yes, I do. Anyway, Also, and with her character, with the CJ Croy character, I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, among a lot of the many former actual White House staff members who worked as, you know, advisors or consultants at different points in time for the series, they had not one but two former press secretaries, you know, working on the show as consultants. You had the Clinton administration's Dee Dee Myers, and then Marlon Fitzwater, who was actually one of the longest tenured press secretaries because he worked for both Reagan and H.W. Bush. So, you know, he's, you know, we just went through an administration where they have how many press secretaries did Trump go through? Three?
Four? Wait, ones that did briefings or ones that didn't?
Oh, forgot about him. That's right.
Because we had one that never gave a briefing.
It would have been amazing. Yeah, but he did it for 6 years in a row. Good Lord. Anyway. You want to move on to the two cathedrals now?
Yeah, let's talk about the two cathedrals.
All right. Well.
All right. You know, I remember David Gott being like the high praise for this episode before I got to it. Huh. And I liked it. And I heard all the hype after that, like, this was one of the best ones ever. And the first time I watched it, I was like, okay, this was okay. And now actually watching it this time, I was actually like, I got it. I was quite enthralled.
I think it's an interesting phenomenon with a rewatch because you've already invested in, like, the Miss... Oh God, I'm gonna mess up her name because I don't have it in front of me. Landingham.
Mrs. Landingham.
Wow. Oh, there's. Oh, let me take a drink. I had to screw up at least one name on the podcast. That's one of the things I really like about this show. They all have nice, easy names for me to pronounce, and then I screw up one of the major characters in this fucking episode. Anyway, what I was trying to say was, I think you already have built in the appreciation of that character from having watched it before. And plus, I don't have this in my notes, but I just thought of it. Plus, she's like a professional, oh, we love that lady, we're going to really love her, and then she's going to die person.
Right?
Because didn't she do that on Scrubs? Wasn't she a...
I think she did. Catherine Justin is her name. I think she did die on Scrubs. You're right.
Yeah, she was like one of JD's patients who was like really, you know, always had was funny and had the wise words, and she was able to deal with the death more than he was and all that, you know, because she knew she was going to die or whatever. Oh, yeah, I remember.
Yeah, it was the episode My Old Lady.
There you go. Look at you pulling out the title of it.
And of course, she was Mrs. McCluskey on Desperate Housewives.
God, well, yeah.
Where she won, you know, Emmys and stuff. But like... I love Mrs. Landingham. I thought she was always a favorite character of mine just because she, you know, it was great that like the whole time they alluded to like they have them having like a deeper relationship than just, you know, boss and like superior and inferior. That's not the right way to say it, but you know what I mean? Like boss and employee. And I guess you don't fully realize how far back it goes until you get the flashbacks with the awesome Kirsten Nelson, who did such a spectacular job. It was like the perfect person to play young Mrs. Landingham. I loved her from, I love everything that Kirsten Nelson is in though. But, you know, just it kind of like if you, it makes you knowing their history. And then you go back and rewatch the first two seasons, it kind of makes it a different, like sheds a different light on it. You're like, oh, like she's not just some sassy lady who doesn't take crap from him. She hasn't been taking crap from him since he was like 15 years old. It's been a while.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you have her backstory too with her twin sons that died in the war and... this was her first car that she was finally going to buy only to die in it. Like,
that's right.
I was really bummed because I didn't know that she died and I was very upset with it.
Oh yeah. They just pull the plug on you with that one. Like, oh, she's so sweet. There's so many other people I'd rather you kill on the show. No, that's not true. Yeah.
Why couldn't they kill, what's her face that works for Toby? Or the one that spies on Leo all the time. The nosy one.
Oh boy. Oh, probably should just let me also, as we're going to talk about this episode, just to set the stage, what led into this episode was, this was the season where, as we got to the later stage of the season, the president had just revealed to, you know, all his senior staffers that he has MS. And this is not
Surprise!
And it's not even a recent diagnosis. He was aware of his condition even well before he decided to run for president. So basically, the mindset is everyone's in that red alert damage control here because the implications are, oh my God, we've been deceiving the American public and the Democratic Party. And even the First Lady is in, you know, legal hot water because she was like secretly prescribing him drugs and stuff.
Right. Like right. Now, if he was only a Republican, nobody would have cared.
Yeah, exactly. Because the,
they'd be like, unity.
Yes. Stand by your man.
I think we need to look forward to the future.
So the big master stroke is, oh, we're going to have a big primetime TV interview to reveal the condition to the world, whatever. And no one seems to know if this means he will or he won't run for a second term, which is like the big little mystery, you know, leading into this episode and then during this episode. And that alone would have been enough to have as your final episode. But of course, when Miss Landingham suddenly passing away at the end of the previous one, that kind of takes over because of the funeral and everything else, and then we get that lovely backstory, and there's these other subplots which pretty much get shoved to the side, showing how much they mean nothing. It's Big Tobacco, who cares? Military coup in Haiti, who cares? You know,
right? Actually, that is the like description on Google. When you Google like two cathedrals, it talks about like the coup and the Big Tobacco. And I was like, man, I watched this today and I don't even remember that.
Yeah. they're not even significant enough to be MacGuffins. They're like, what? Who cares? You know, because we're watching it for those are the two main things we're watching it for. We're watching it, the dealing with her death, and how's the president going to deal with the whole MS thing? Is he going to run again? And of course, if we just have to look at the ratings for the show, which it was doing very well, then it's like, oh, of course it's going to run again. We're not going to have a show otherwise. I agree. I really enjoy the flashbacks. That actress, what'd you say? What's her name? Is it Christine Nielsen?
Kirsten.
Kirsten. Nielsen. I always screw up that. See, two names. I'm going to have another drink. Hold on. Yeah, it was funny. When I first saw her on screen, it took me like 10 seconds to go, I know her. Where do I know her
from? She's from Psych.
Psych. She's the captain.
The captain in Psych, yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, it's a crossover because we got Dulé Hill, but oh, they're in the wrong time period. They can never meet each other. Oh, damn. You know? Oh, man. But what was I going to say? What I really enjoyed about the flashback story, other than pretty decent casting, she's excellent casting. The kid playing him is fine.
Yeah, you know, he's okay.
He's all right. I wasn't going to put him on my short list of, ooh, child actors to keep an eye on or anything.
But he does do a good job getting like the cadence and like the mannerisms of, yeah.
And it's kind of funny to have they got Lawrence O'Donnell to play his dad, who, you know, we know as he's a former White House person himself, and he's had a show on MSNBC, I think MSNBC, for the last several many years now, I think. Not really an accomplished actor, but they don't give him too much to do, so he doesn't really muck up the works here.
Right.
But I did enjoy how they had, you have those flashback scenes and the way they work, and even though one of the big things she's trying to get him to do is speak on behalf of the women in the private school there, and I guess from what ends up happening between him and his father, I'm guessing he never has that conversation with his dad. That was the impression I had.
You know, was sort of like the Jed Bartlett origin story. Like if she hadn't pushed him to do that or to think about that, then he might not have been set on the political path to become president.
I agree. Which
makes it all the more poetic and beautiful and tragic that she's passed like this, because, you know, this woman was the radioactive spider that bit him.
See, now I'm picturing her with like eight legs. You're ruining it for me. Granny glasses on a little spider. But yeah, I mean, she, for someone who probably, it's not like she was like, you know, a mother or a nanny, whatever, but she still spent enough significant time or moments with this teenage Bartlett to have that major an influence on the kind of man that he was going to grow up to be. And I love tying in some of the things that are said there with the scene we get late in the episode when Bartlett is...
Then I don't even want to know you.
Yeah, I love that. And you know, it's done so nicely.
Yeah,
it
really is. It really is. I like fully got it this time when I watched it.
It was like, oh, look, full circle. Very nice. Very nice. Now, this is a show which obviously, you know, most episodes are really about, you know, the ensemble and how great, you know, everyone is in their own individual. And they are good in this episode as well. But this is like a Sheen, Bartlett, whatever you want to call it, showcase episode. The monologue he does at the church.
All in Latin too? Or the Latin part? Awesome.
Yeah. Do you know what it means? Because I looked it up, but I have a feeling you're the kind of person who did that as well. Do you know what he said in Latin?
You know, that's so funny. I started to look it up and then I never finished it. But I did turn on, I did go back and turned on, because I went back, I turned on the closed captioning because I wanted to try to Google it.
I have it in front of me. So anyway.
Go ahead.
It's okay. By the way, I leave the captioning on all the time anyway, so I'm just used to it.
Usually I do too, but I was watching on my work computer, and I never logged into HBO Max on my work computer before, so it was turned off. It says thank you. Okay, I got it too. Go ahead.
Well, I grabbed it. It's the, like the first thing you find in the trivia section about this episode on IMDb. It's like it's right there. So I'll just quote directly from.
Go for
from
it. Outside.
The president's tirade in Latin at the end loosely translates as, "Thank you, Lord. Am I to believe these things from a righteous God, a just God, a wise God? To hell with your punishments. I was your servant, your messenger on the earth. I did my duty. To hell with your punishments. And to hell with you." And then the sentences, I'm going to screw this up. Cruciatus in crucem, eis in crucem, literally translates as to a cross with your punishments, to a cross with you. So an idiomatic translation of that last part might actually be, go crucify yourself. And that's the way they translate it on IMDb.
So that's his way of telling God to go fuck himself, essentially.
Basically.
I'm sorry. I've cursed a lot. I feel like it's okay, but I'm sorry. It is not.
You don't need to apologize. It's fine. We allow cursing on this podcast. You can curse on our page, curse on our podcast. We
don't. Okay. I thought you did. I figured you did.
Yeah. Oh, in fact, I look down on people who don't curse. The only thing is, my only thing is, like, I hate when people curse, like, way too fast. It's like, you know, my joke with Dan was when he would drop an F-bomb within the first minute of a podcast. Like, really? Give people a chance to, like, sit down, relax, take a sip of something before you start saying fuckity, fuck, 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 whatever.
He really did tell God to go fuck himself, though. Yeah. It's funny, like hearing this, which I kind of figured I knew. Actually, I did know the righteous God, a just God part because I recognized that. But like everything else, hearing it, and then when he's like, "You get hoins," and I'm like, "You're throwing a temper tantrum. You think that everything revolves around you, but guess what? God doesn't work like that, Catholic. You should know that." That's like the first thing we're taught.
Oh man! what I thought was interesting about it is before we get to the Latin part, you know, at first he's kind of like,
Latin part's pretty badass though.
Yeah. Oh, that is the badass part. But at first, it's kind of like it's almost like he's giving an interview about his accomplishments because he's ticking through all the things he's done. But
right.
Then,
well, he is a narcissist, I guess.
Well. wait a minute! Someone who's president is a narcissist. Wait, is that possible? They're all.
I know, that was the joke.
I know you got it. In fact, you made it. But when he But just the whole, I mean, even him noting, you know, the cosmic joke of her getting the first new car and it's her first time driving, that's when she gets killed. You know, it's very powerful.
Right, it is like, you killed her to get back to punish me. And I'm like, there's the Catholic I know and love. It's all about me.
And also, just to put a final stamp on it, you know, and I use that word deliberately now, and also echoing something from the flashback story, when he finishes his tantrum, that's when he lights and then immediately stamps out a cigarette in the cathedral. Because yes. That's like the first thing he's passively aggressively scolded for back by his father, where he's not really scolded for, but we know he's the one who did it.
Yes. And if you didn't know then, you knew by the end.
Right. Oh, it also turns out, I think this is, I can't remember where I saw this. It probably might have been IMDb as well, but just popped into my head. Apparently, the people at the National Cathedral were really pissed off that they did that, that they actually stamped out a cigarette in the National Cathedral.
Oh, really?
And they've not allowed filming in there ever since.
Ooh, bad boy. If God wasn't mad at you before, he sure is now.
Really? So, but
they got like 8 more seasons, so they were fine.
Yeah, they got their money. We're not going to film another scene in this cathedral. You know what? I bet there's other cathedrals that'll
right. We're just going to build a sound stage. The network's going to give us some money. We're fine.
And yeah, and again, going back to that scene that he has with Mrs. Landingham in the Oval Office, I love that scene. I think that's just so, you know, obviously it's one of those few times on a show like this where they kind of, you know, escape reality a little bit because, you know, it's obviously he's talking to himself and he's just imagining that she's there or whatever. But it gives us a chance to see Catherine Justin one last time. And again, echoing what she said years earlier was really a lovely little touch there.
That was awesome.
Yeah. And I would say that, I mean, they did it. I mean, at least when they eventually replaced that position on the show with, at least they went and got someone like Lily Tomlin.
Oh, that's right.
Who's, you know, a pretty heavy hitter. You know,
I was going to say, she's Lily Tomlin.
Yeah, it's Lily Tomlin.
Also on the X-Files for a hot minute.
We're not talking about the X-Files.
We're not.
Oh, God. I'm trying to think what else was really kind of interesting. And obviously with Bartlett's the standout, but that doesn't take away, hey, your favorite guy, Leo. Leo... Mm-hmm. Staff-wise, he's the next one who really kind of, I think, really comes into play in this episode. I really enjoy the way, while everyone seems to be nervous and wondering and freaking out, is he going to run, is he not going to run, whatever, he's the guy that seems more steadfast because he's the one who believes in Bartlett, you know, Bartlett for America. And he seems to be the only one who likely believes he's going to run again. That was the way I kind of interpreted what he was doing there.
Yeah, I did too. I was like, oh, he's his work husband.
and then you also got at the same time you have Toby, who's kind of bewildered that there's like some appointment that's been added to his afternoon calendar, you know, the same day, like right in between a funeral and the big interview. I know
it was like, could they make him any more Jewish? Come on, guys. No, just kidding. I'm just teasing.
For the one part of Long Island that's not Jewish.
So, I sure am. I'm from the MAGA part of Long Island. Thank you very much.
I know. So, and then he finds out that the interview is, the appointment actually turns out to be like a job offer to be a news director for a 24-hour cable news network that's being planned. It's in the planning stages at that point, which of course he turns down, you know, solidarity for the president, no matter what the decision is. Another little piece of trivia, which I don't personally care about myself, but people out there might. Apparently that cable news network that they're talking about, you know, they're going to build and create whatever that's referenced here.
Did it become OAN?
That's the one the one from the newsroom. No, not from. Idiot. Oh, yeah, I didn't even catch what you said until it clicked like about 15 seconds into what I was already saying. He's like, no, shut up.
Sorry. I'm a troublemaker today.
Oh, man. Here comes Alex Jones.
Oh, so that's one from the newsroom. Actually, that's awesome. Yeah. I love when I honestly, personally, I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, but I love when somebody that creates multiple properties keeps it all within the same universe.
Yeah. And I will tell you right now, because you already mentioned earlier my less than positive feeling about the newsroom, but if Toby Ziegler had been the news director on that series,
it would have been so much better.
I probably would have liked the show way more and would have been into it. Instead of that awful character. Oh, she's horrible. And I guess the whole thing comes down to the end of the episode, and they still don't know what he's going to say, but they do that nice move, which is referenced, I think, in the flashback, right? The thing where she knows that he's made up his mind about something because he'll stick his hands in his pockets.
And look
to the side and smile over. Which is interesting. I was thinking about the hands in the pockets thing.
He has a tell.
Because, yeah, definitely a tell. But it's,
holy shucks. I don't have a full house.
But it's funny because it made me think many years ago when I used to work at this office for a very long time. And every once in a while, I was one of the random people or not so random people picked to work like a trade show booth for the company. Could be in New York, could be in Boston or Seattle, whatever the heck it was, kind of travel for them. And one of the first things they tell you you're not allowed to do is you're not allowed to put your hands in your pockets. You can't send it with your hands in your pockets.
And really?
It's like one of the big rules. Can't put your hands in your pockets. I wonder if people, at least back in the 90s, maybe not nowadays, who used to work in like little retail outlets, like my best friend used to work in like Genovese in the early 90s or something. I said, did they tell you you couldn't put your hands in your pockets? Because I'm wondering, does that have some weird kind of, you know, connotation where the person is being kind of lazy or not, or doesn't care, or watching the clock or something. I don't know.
Or maybe they thought like they were stealing.
Well, they have smocks. They would just put in there, which is weird because putting aside that I'm someone who's a big fan of hands in the pockets, and I know what that sounds like even as I just said it out loud.
No, it's okay. I'm always freezing. So I am so happy for mask mandates at the moment, because when I'm outside taking a walk, I am really glad to put my mask on my face, even when I'm alone, because it's like a face blanket. Right. So I also appreciate the hands in the pocket.
Oh, yeah, it keeps your hands warm, especially because I never wear gloves. But I also, in my mind, and why it works well with the Bartlett character, I kind of think of that being kind of like a wise dude kind of a thing. I picture like Mark Twain having his hands in his pockets, or
that dude was definitely a 56-year-old man when he was 15.
You know, that kind of a thing. It's like, oh, I bet Henry Fonda, whatever role he put his hands. I don't know why I'm picking Henry Fonda. I should have said Lincoln, but I don't know.
But you didn't, so just roll with it.
Yeah, it's fine, because, again, this is what happens when you don't follow a script. But I do like the fact that the season ends. It's not really a cliffhanger, because we know what the answer is.
It got renewed, so we know we're good.
Yeah, but it's just it's just a nice, and also considering this is Aaron Sorkin, and again, the man known for words and dialogue, but the great way to end this episode doesn't require words.
It's great. It's just wonderful acting by all of them, particularly like, you know, Leo just being like, watch this, and you know, the staff being so nervous, and then him just looking up and smiling like a little bit, you know, with the hands in the pockets, and like, you're like, oh yeah, it was just great. It was really great. And the music that they chose for the end, because at that point I had it, you know, on the closed captioning, the music is just equally fantastic.
Right. Is this the thing where they're using, is that the one where they're using the Dire Straits song, I think, if I'm not mistaken? I think they use the Dire Straits song in that one. I think they do. I'm going to say they do, because I'm going by my memory right now. I mean, overall, it's one of those that, again, I'm not saying it would be my personal selection for the best episode of the series. I haven't really thought about it that much. But I understand why it's so highly regarded, especially after watching it, much the way you did. Because it's powerful, it's emotional, it's got a, you know, it's got its drama, it's got its backstory filling, whatever. But when I'm thinking about the ones I just watched, and a few of my favorites were among those, there's a bunch that have that kind of powerful emotional. Oh, by the way, in case that didn't sound like a segue, this is where we talk about a few other episodes before we finish up the podcast.
Anyway. I got it. I knew where you were going.
I know. I like doing it for the listeners so they can be, you know, they can hate me more. One of the things, I mean, I really like the that two-parter, the In the Shadow of the Two Gunmen
one. Yes. What is it called?
It's In the Shadow.
In the Shadow of Two Gunmen. You're right.
I mean, the random, you know, deliverance looking Nazi tattooed guy aside, which seemed a little to me.
A little too modern.
Yeah. Wait, it's like wait, did he steal a podium or something? I've seen that guy before. Was he beating someone with a flag? I can't be sure.
Listen, he was just searching for his closest Whole Foods. Okay.
God. But that one I really enjoyed, and surprisingly, because you figured, oh, they're just throwing something. Oh, look, sudden violence. People are being shot, but it actually worked really well. Because it also...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go on. Because I was gonna knock to another episode, so if you have something more to say...
Well, I was going to point out that the second part of that... Actually, both parts, right, are flashbacks of how the whole team got together.
Yes. That's one of the things I really like about it. There's one that I'm going to talk about in a moment, which is probably might actually be my favorite.
Okay,
which really does that. But I'm going to keep the anticipation level going for that one, because the other one I want to mention before I get to that one connects to this two-parter.
I quiver with anticipation. Go ahead.
I haven't had that effect on anybody in over a year. Thank you. Thanks, COVID. I thank you. My hand thanks you. My computer thanks you. Noelle is a great episode. And that's the one where Josh is dealing with the post-traumatic stress he's kind of manifested from recovering from the shooting. That's a great episode. Whenever you get Adam Arkin to show up, because he's just great at either being an asshole, or he's someone who's like almost an asshole, but you kind of like him, but he's still kind of an asshole. I think that's a really, and it turns out I think that's the first time he shows up. And I think he shows up like three more times on the series. So he's basically like the White House psychiatrist, essentially.
Right.
But now I'll get to it. The one that I really love, which might be my favorite episode of the series, it's Bartlett for America. That's the midway, roughly near the midway point of season three, or close to it. That's the one where the main plot line is Leo is testifying before the Senate about Bartlett and his MS, and, you know, when did he know? When didn't he know? You know, they're trying to figure out who's been lying and all that kind of stuff. And we get all these flashbacks to early on the campaign trail with Leo and Bartlett when he was first running for president, and Leo's unfortunate falling off the wagon that we see on a very important night in the Bartlett campaign. And it's very powerful. I mean, the flashbacks that we see in Shadow of the Two Gunmen are probably a lot more fun. You go, oh, there's CJ for the first time, and she's working at a PR thing in LA, or Sam and Josh, you know, in the New York law office when Josh keeps tapping on the glass or whatever the heck it was. But the ones with Leo, they're just, it's really powerful. And it's probably the best performance stuff that Leo, or John Spencer, I should say, the actor's name, probably does in the whole series. It's probably one of the reasons I really like season three. Season four, you know, is where I think the series starts to have some issues, you know, especially it's Sorkin's final season and all.
So tell me.
Yes.
So, you know, scrolling through, I definitely didn't like the whole Sam leaving plot and all that in 4. And I think that one of the reasons I didn't watch past 4 was because I didn't love the season, especially the second half of it, as much as the rest of it. And because I had heard not great things about the show after Sorkin leaves, can you tell me, should I just push on and, you know, it get better?
I would say I would keep watching it because, yes, is there a drop off after Sorkin leaves? Yeah, there is. Is it as dramatic as other shows where, like, a major showrunner or creator or whatever creative left? Not that extreme.
Okay.
But it's just be aware. It one might say it goes from being a great show to, well, it's pretty good. There's still going to be standout episodes. You know, like I mentioned, John Goodman, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, let me make sure I don't screw that one up. Well, I am correct about this, right? I think John Goodman appears like in the first few episodes of the 5th season, if I'm not mistaken. Am I right about that? Yes, because of how season 4 ends with the whole thing. Did you finish season 4? Or did you stop? Yes. Oh, you did. So you know what happened with the daughter.
Yes.
Okay. Which is also, that was kind of Sorkin saying, I'm just going to go crazy here because I'm leaving.
Yes. We solidly finished season 4.
Right. Yeah. The first few episodes of season 5 have, you know, John Goodman being the president while they're searching for Zoe or whatever. So that's kind of interesting because, you know, hey, it's John Goodman, you know?
Right. And I knew that because, again, I've spoiled myself at some point after we stopped watching it. But I do want to go back because I'm sure there's a lot that I've missed.
Yeah. I mean, again, is it as good as the first 4? No, but there are some interesting things that might be worth checking out. It does suck not to have the Sam Seaborn on it anymore, but there are definitely a few standouts. There's one, like, I won't spoil it, but there's one when they're dealing with putting someone new on the Supreme Court. And not to be confused with when they do that, whatever James Almost spec early on, this is they have to go through it again.
Menendez, as he shouts at God angrily, yes. I put him on the court. I did, not someone else. Bless me, Father.
Well, they doubled down with that in the 5th season. There's an episode called The Supremes, which is a pretty good one. Got some notable, very notable guest actor is on that one. I don't know if you want me to say who it is because I don't know.
Go for it.
This woman named Glenn something, Glenn Close.
Oh, yeah. So he puts a woman on the Supreme Court.
That's right. And what's funny is because I realized that when I was watching one of the final episodes and they're having like an inauguration, because I was like, hey, look at it, I'm going to watch another inauguration this week. And she's supposed to be that justice, but obviously, she probably was not available. So I was noticing how they were very careful to keep shooting this woman from behind, where you just see her hair, she's far away. It's like, oh, they really couldn't get Glenn Close just to show up for like a minute? And this is pretty far the days of when, oh, well, we'll just CGI her in here.
Right.
Nope. I just noticed it. It just felt a little bit awkward because anyone who watches the show would know that's supposed to be Glenn Close's character, but that's pretty clearly not her. It's, you know, that doesn't even look like her. Anyway.
Right. Spoiler alert.
It's, you know, excuse me. It's, like I said, it's, hey, that means it's 2 shows in a row where I would say the first 4 seasons are really great and then it kind of falls off after that. Because I would say that that's when I was talking with Pat about Game of Thrones, and my issue with Game of Thrones is after season 4, I think it kind of takes a bit.
I think Game of Thrones redeemed itself in the second to last season.
Yeah, and then what happened?
The last season is, you know, the last season.
then it took its redemption and puked it up. So,
but like the whole point, like the whole start of like the White Walkers thing in Game of Thrones. Oh my God, what's it called? The battle across the. You know what I'm talking about?
It's about the Long Night or the
Long Night is no.
Oh, you're talking about the good one. Oh, Hardhome.
Talking about the good Hard Home. Oh, that's awesome.
That's great. Oh, me and Pat talked about it. Again, you should listen to the podcast. It's actually pretty good.
I will.
Because he's an ardent Game of Thrones expert fan and all around nice guy. I mean, I know a couple of the Game of Thrones experts out there, but they're not likable and they're kind of assholes. But they don't appear on our podcast, so I don't have to worry about that. Who could I be talking about? But Pat will say that there are issues from the later seasons, and it becomes more about great episode, more great moments than anything else. And I said, yeah, that's kind of my feeling. I was like, oh, I thought we were going to be all arguing about this. God damn it. But no, it's a good podcast. Listen, check it out. Anyway, so I think we've kind of, have we covered West Wing? I think we've covered West Wing.
I think you covered West Wing.
Yeah, I think we've done, I think even with all the fumfering and the pausing, whatever, hey, you know what? It felt real. And it's, you know, for our 35 listeners, I'm sure they'll enjoy it. So
hey, I like to keep it real, okay?
There you go.
Hold on. I did take notes, so let me just make sure that we didn't. Nope, we got everything.
I don't know if it's just having you on or whatever. I will have all these notes in front of me, and I do go to them sometimes, but then I find myself just kind of like forgetting about them.
I'm so sorry.
No, please. Anyway, ouch, that hurts. No, it's fine. It's because that means we're actually talking. No, so it's fine. But you know, sometimes it doesn't happen on this podcast. Okay.
What, anyway. A podcast with you where there's no actual talking? Shenanigans.
I feel like I've been insulted, and I'm not sure about
that. Malarkey!
All right, well, at least maybe now she's learned that I only have one name, not two. But anyway, so...
Oh, no, you've got two. You're never going to be just Scott.
you are the only... Anyway, it doesn't matter. Okay, getting back to the podcast, getting my head...
It doesn't, because it's not going to change it.
I'm never going to Raleigh again. All right, so we have
we haven't been anywhere in years now. Okay,
I know. My beard is like twice as long as Brian's was last time he was at. You know, it's crazy.
But I'm cha.
Yeah. So get my mind on straight. Wow. Okay, so hopefully some of you enjoyed that podcast and. People are friends of Colleen.
I hope I lived up to everything Pat said about me.
you know, here's the funny thing. We were having such a really nice streak here. Like our best of 2020 parts one and two, I thought were like fucking amazing. The one with Jack was great. The one with Pat was great. I was like, oh my God, it's such a great streak. It's the only good thing about January so far for me are these podcasts. And then we hit this iceberg. No, I'm just kidding. It was great. It was fine.
What?
I'm kidding. I'm not having you on for the lost one. I'm just making sure. Anyway, so.
Oh, that's fine. I'm still pissed that Jay was just completely ignored me and all of a sudden was like, oh, did you really watch this too? Because that is a thing that happened. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me right now? And you're not even like one episode in. You're on like four.
Oh, boy.
The worst.
Okay. Alrighty then. So now that we've completed all that fun and games, let me get back to the actual countdown of this podcast. So just to recap where we are in the countdown, we started way back in October with number 20 with an episode of House. That was House's Head from season 4. Number 19 was an episode of Dexter. It was The Getaway, which was a season 4 finale. Number 18 was Firefly Out of Gas from, well, it's only one season, so doesn't really make sense to say anything else about it. Number 17 was from Mr. Robot, 407 Proxy Authentication Required from its final season 4 season. And number 16 was Hannibal, the season 2 finale, Miximono. Number 15, hey, we were talking about that earlier in this podcast for much longer than I thought we would. The Good Wife, Hitting the Fan, which is actually the fifth episode of season 5. Such a good episode. Number 14, hey, it's the one that Colleen was on. It was the X-Files, Clyde Bruckman's Final Repose, which was from season 3. Number 13 was Justified, Bloody Harlan, the season 2 finale. Number 12 was Battlestar Galactica, Crossroads Part 2, which was the season 3 finale. Number 11, just missing the top 10, was an episode of Watchmen, This Extraordinary Being. Number 10, here we get into the rarefied ground, was From Deadwood, was the season 1 finale, Sold Under Sin. Number 9, which we've mentioned a few times already on this podcast, was Game of Thrones, The Reigns of Castamere, obviously the 9th episode from Season 3, because all the good ones are the 9th episode, of course. And you just heard us talk about number 8, which was The West Wing, Two Cathedrals, which was the Season 2 finale. So, oh boy, now we're up to the final 7. So coming in at number 7 on the greatest TV drama episodes of all time, and one of these days I'll time this so I get it right at the cymbal crash, but I never seem to get it done right. It is, come on cymbals. It is the series Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and it will be the episode Hush. That would be the 10th episode from Season 4. And that, I'll tell you right now, that might be, in the entire countdown, one of the only semi-controversial picks, and I will explain why on that podcast. That might be the one where I might have broken my own rules. So there's
Yeah. Who is speaking? Who is your guest?
I'm going to get to that right now. My co-host for that one, somehow she's turned out to be the person who's co-hosted the most of these with me, which I was not expecting going into this. It's going to be Court or Courtney Robinson. She was here for Firefly and The Good Wife and Watchmen, and she's here for Buffy. I will confess, I did also try an old friend of mine who I don't even know if she's ever listened to this podcast before, but I thought it would be cool if she did it because she's the one who got me to watch Buffy, like, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. The first show I ever binged in my life was Buffy the Vampire Slayer. That was the first thing I ever binged.
I have never seen Buffy.
If you were able to get through Sabrina owes everything to Buffy.
I know. I've heard.
You're a fan of Veronica Mars, right?
Love me some Veronica Mars.
Veronica Mars owes a lot to Buffy. Buffy begats all these shows, and you can see how similar they are. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of things about Buffy that also get a little bit dated because, you know, it was from the 90s mainly. So certain things won't hold up. Hush is an amazingly, if I could tell you one episode to watch, just like you want to see an episode of Buffy that's good, that's the one I tell you to watch. That is.
I have heard Hush is actually one of the ones that I've heard of.
Yeah. Hush is, it's so good. And just for another little hint about how interesting it's going to be when we talk about it in a couple of weeks, because I'm not sure when this podcast is going to be, because we also have podcast number 300 coming up, so I got to figure out the scheduling of all this crap.
You've got to figure it out, people.
Yeah, there's a little bit, like I said, there's controversy about this pick and what went into it. If I had done this podcast a week earlier, I might have been telling you a different episode. So I'll give you, so it's something to look forward to. Like, ooh, what could we be talking about? What could have happened? It's fascinating. Anyway, no one cares. All right, Colleen, we're getting near the wrap up part. Is there anything you'd like to promote on the podcast front?
Not really. I mean, I do a show, as you heard, you know, like 10 episodes back, the broadcast with Amanda Shani and Colleen. We are silly with a side of seriousness. We are like, I don't know, kind of like girls' night in a way. I don't know. Sometimes we get a little political. We've kind of been thankfully able to scale back on that since things have calmed down. But we I don't know, we have fun. Check us out. Check us out. We're fun. It's like me now, but like with two other people that are like me now. So it's great.
Oh, that should attract plenty of people after that.
Yeah, I know. I did a terrible job. I was also prepared for this, and I was also unprepared. Womp womp. Anyway, I don't know.
Let me get through our wrap up so we can actually
get some sleep.
So if you enjoyed this podcast, and that would be amazing if you did, you might enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. You can like the page, excuse me, and you can join the conversation or start the conversation about TV shows like the one we just discussed or pretty much anything else. You can find us on Apple Podcasts where you can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us there. I have no idea if anyone ever rates and reviews us anymore, but who cares? Better yet, you can go to stvdpodcast.podbean.com where you can find all 299, ooh, that's such a cool number to say, 299 episodes. It's like five or six good ones. You can also find us, I don't know, Stitcher. One day someone will download us there. I don't know. Or as you are, to use Colleen's words from like several weeks ago, or just find us wherever podcasts are found or wherever. Some cool
way you put it. Yeah, you know.
I like that. Whatever. Cool. And finally, you can follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. That's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. That's it for the podcast. Like I said, next week, presumably we will be pumping out or putting out or whatever, crapping out, podcast number 300. I still Yay! have to talk.
It is my honor to be 299.
Yeah. And you were on 100 and you were to be on 299. That means, well, it doesn't really mean anything now that I think about it.
It sounds cool. Means you have to get me on 398.
That's right. I've already said I do not plan for this podcast to be going to 398. The only reason this podcast is still on is because I'm waiting for Better Call Saul to finish. Then this podcast is over. Anyway.
Dominu, Agibu, Albede. You get Dan.
How do you crucify yourself in the face? I'm not sure.
Fuck you in the face. I know that was a joke. Crucify you in the face. Yeah. You're right. Sorry, I got you know a little trigger happy with it. I was like, yes. I don't get to say it as much anymore.
And I'm the one who's drinking. All right. Anyway, yep, that does it for us. Like I said, we'll be putting out number 300, I think, next week. I have a few things planned for it. I think I've mentioned them on one of our podcasts. One of them may very well be me doing a rundown, listy, countdown-y kind of thing of the greatest, most overlooked and underrated TV series of the 21st century, I believe. But there'll probably be more stuff on the podcast net. Maybe I'll talk about WandaVision. Who knows?
Do you like WandaVision?
I do like it. I am analyzing the fuck out of that thing. So I can't believe I'm not on a podcast, but, you know, writing it on fucking Facebook instead. So I may end up doing a mini cast. I may just like do a recording myself and put it out like a little 15-20 minute podcast every week for that one. I'm thinking about it, just for Gail. I don't know.
Anyway. Oh hey, girl, Gail.
Gail's awesome. Oh, Ro is going to probably listen to this one. Anyway, Colleen, again, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for co-hosting. I think the whiskey just kicked in right now.
I'm so jealous. Dry January is almost over. Almost.
Dry January. What is that? Here, I'll take a sip just for you. So good. Thank you so much for co-hosting.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. You
Colleen84 on Twitter.
I don't know why I never give my own Twitter thing. I never do. That's a good idea. But yeah, Colleen. Oh yeah, she is actually a fun person to see on Twitter. Her political commentary on Twitter is very funny. She's even made me laugh a couple times.
Ooh, that's exciting.
That's what she said.
You guys basically got all the highlights here. So
you may be one of the few people I don't mind helping causing to derail the podcast because I still kind of enjoy it. So that's fine.
Well, thank you. I do apologize. No, I was trying to be on good behavior.
It's fine. I was the one who was... You know what it was? Where it all went wrong? When you had me doubting myself about the flashbacks in Bartlett for America, and I kept going, but why did I write that down then? Oh no, I've screwed up everything. I'm typing, I'm looking, like, no, I mentioned flashbacks, but they're the different flashbacks. Now I don't remember which flashbacks are in which episode, and whatever. Anyway. Enough out of me. I'm going to say goodnight to Colleen. Goodnight to everybody out there. Colleen, you may have the last word.
Good night. I had enough words, okay? You see? I had enough words. See,
now I'm thinking back when you...
I'll pay it forward. Check out with Courtney. I don't really know her, but it's wonderful.
I'm just remembering how you just magically disappeared during the X-Files podcast. And I'm thinking, it might not have been such a bad thing.
Actually, no? I forgot. Who was doing it next week? Was it somebody named Courtney? I'm so sorry. I'm the worst.
All right, enough out of you. Good night, everybody.
No, I'm sorry. I'm being an asshole now. Now I'm just kidding. No, check out next week. I'm gonna watch Buffy so I can listen to it. And I'm also gonna go back and listen to the Pat one. That's my last words. Okay, sorry. I know we got to do this 90-minute thing. So peace. Bye.
You're off.
Next time I'm on the show, I'm drinking.
Don't worry about the 90-minute thing because the ones with Pat and Jack were both like 2 hours.
Okay, cool. No, seriously, who is doing next week's show?
Okay, first of all, I don't know if it's going to be released next week, so there's that.
Oh, in 2 weeks, whatever.
Court or Courtney Robinson.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
she's I know her? I think I feel.
Yes, I think she's on the page. Well, she's kind of been taking a sabbatical off of Facebook. Should not be talking about this on the podcast. All right, shut up, Scott. Good night, everybody. Bye-bye.
Oh, cool. Me too. I am as well. Okay, bye.